From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
America Latina y el Caribe como zona de paz.
Latin America and the Caribbean, a zone of peace based on the respect of the principles and norms of international development, including the international instruments that the member states are part of, as well as the purposes and principles of the United Nations Charter.
Y los principios y propósitos de la Carta de las Naciones Unidas.
That was Cuban President Raúl Castro speaking Thursday at the close of the second Community of Latin American and Caribbean States, or CELAC, summit in Havana. The conference was attended by senior officials from all 33 Caribbean and Latin American nations. A number of other heads of state spoke at the close of the conference. Bolivian President Evo Morales referenced his country's long history of military coups backed by the U.S. He said to the gathering, quote, "Without the U.S., there would be no military coups," closed quote. Morales also challenged the other heads of state in light of last year's revelation of NSA spying, thus, quote, "I propose to you all the following, that we all spy on Obama and his government so we can guarantee global security," closed quote. Jose Mujica, the president of Uruguay, called for nations to stop thinking only of themselves. He said, quote, "Civilization is condemned if it does not stop thinking as a single country or within each country, if people don't stop thinking as a single social class," close quote. In the Declaration of Havana, issued at the conclusion of the summit, the member countries emphasized that within only 2 years since the founding of CELAC, a space has been constructed of dialogue and political agreement which unites and makes possible the goal of working together for the well-being of the peoples of the region. The document emphasizes the need to strengthen the democracies of CELAC nations and to build more inclusive societies. It said, quote, "Let us work for sustainable development, for overcoming inequality, and a more equitable distribution of wealth, so that all men and women feel that democracy gives meaning to their lives. This is the mission. This is the task to which we have been called, and this is the political responsibility we have before us, for which we must be accountable to our peoples," closed quote. The conference declaration placed as its highest priority the strengthening of food security, literacy development, universal free public education and continuing education, public land rights, the development of agriculture, including that of family and small farms, and support for small agricultural producers, decent, lasting employment and bolstered unemployment protection, universal public health care, the right to adequate housing for all, and productive industrial development, all considered to be decisive steps towards the elimination of hunger, poverty, and social exclusion. The declaration also reaffirmed the desire to promote regional, sub-regional, bilateral, and trilateral cooperative development programs, as well as a policy of south-south and triangular cooperation, while taking into consideration the specific characteristics and needs of each country and subregion. The group heralded the establishment of a CELAC-China forum and a dialogue mechanism with the Russian Federation, which they predict will have a positive impact on the organization's activities. Support was also expressed for the process underway in the preparation for the second European Union CELAC summit, scheduled for 2015 in Brussels. As protests continue in Ukraine, President Viktor Yanukovych announced he was taking sick leave. The expected repeal of laws imposing curbs on speech and assembly, which was promised, has yet to be signed into law. A statement on the president's website, attributed to a deputy director of the Presidential Department for Medical Affairs, said the 63-year-old president was taking the time off because of a respiratory illness and fever. There was no indication of how long he was expected to be absent. while Afghan President Hamid Karzai wrangles with the Obama administration over a proposed agreement to allow U.S. and NATO troops to remain in the country for another 10 years, at least one U.N. official sees hope for a return to normal life and development after decades of war. Daniel Dickinson reports.
Afghanistan has the opportunity to focus on a normal development agenda following many years of instability, according to the head of the UN mission in the country, UNAMA. Jan Kubis told a meeting on Wednesday that there have been dramatic improvements in the lives of the Afghan people. Education and health, as well as infrastructure, have all improved, he said.
Afghanistan's economy has been distorted by years of war and over the last decade by the sheer scale of the international intervention. There is now the opportunity to return to a more normal development agenda.
However, the top UN envoy in Afghanistan pointed out that the country is facing challenges such as lower than expected government revenues, massive security expenditure, and rising costs. Mr. Kubis stressed that the international community, including the United Nations, remains resolute in its long-term support for Afghanistan. NATO-led forces are scheduled to withdraw from the country at the end of this year. Daniel Dickinson, United Nations.
Meanwhile, a suicide car bomber attacked a police and intelligence compound in the country's eastern Nangarhar province's Pachir Wagam district early Thursday morning, killing two officers. Three other members of the security forces were injured in the attack. The Taliban reportedly claimed responsibility in an emailed statement. The two suicide bombers responsible for the attacks in the Russian city of Volgograd in December have been identified, the Russian National Anti-Terrorism Committee said Thursday. The bombers' alleged accomplices, suspected of aiding their travel to Volgograd, have been detained. However, the committee said those responsible for planning the terrorist attacks may still be at large. A search is underway. The two terrorist attacks took place in the space of just over 24 hours on December 29th and 30th. The first, a huge blast at the Volgograd railway station on December 29th, was followed by another a day later inside a packed city bus. More than 30 people were killed in the attacks and dozens more injured. Meanwhile, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov is visiting Germany this weekend to take part in the 50th Munich Security Conference on Friday and Saturday. Conference participants reportedly plan to discuss security in the Euro-Atlantic region, the crisis in Ukraine, the development of relations between Russia and the EU and Russia and NATO, regulation of cyberspace, the situation in Syria and in the Middle East generally, the Iran nuclear program, the global financial downturn's influence on global security and stability, energy security, and other matters. While at the conference, Lavrov is expected to meet with Ukrainian Foreign Minister Leonid Kuchera and U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry on the sidelines and may have other bilateral meetings as well. There will likely be meetings with German Foreign Minister Frank-Walter Steinmeier and U.N. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, a bilateral meeting with Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif has been scheduled for February 1st. Lavrov will also take part in a three-way meeting with the foreign ministers of Germany and Poland. Gunmen reportedly kidnapped the son of the Libyan Army's Special Forces Commander, Colonel Wanias Boukmada, in the latest high-profile abduction to take place in the eastern city of Benghazi, where the military has been battling locally-based militants. Boukmada said his son was leaving college on Thursday when two cars blocked his way and dragged him away. No group has yet claimed responsibility for the kidnapping. The army has been fighting brigades from the hardline Islamist group Ansar al-Sharia in Benghazi for the past months.
Let me move to the Snowden disclosures and what I think has been outlined is a trust deficit that exists between the public and the intelligence community. This committee was created to address a severe breach of trust that developed when it was revealed that the CIA was conducting unlawful domestic searches. The Church Committee went to work, found that to be true. I want to be able to reassure the American people, especially given what's been happening that the CIA and the director understand the limits of their mission and of its authorities. We all are well aware of Executive Order 12333. That order prohibits the CIA from engaging in domestic spying and searches of U.S. citizens within our borders. Can you assure the committee that the CIA does not conduct such domestic spying and searches?
I can assure the committee that the CIA follows the letter and the spirit of the law in terms of what CIA's authorities are, in terms of its responsibilities to collect intelligence that will keep this country safe. Yes, Senator, I do.
That was Democratic Senator Mark Udall of New Mexico questioning CIA Director John Brennan at a hearing Wednesday of the Senate Select Intelligence Committee. During his statement before the committee, James Clapper, Director of National Intelligence, issued a blistering statement condemning NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden, calling the widely published surveillance disclosures a perfect storm that he said would endanger American lives. We'll have more from the committee hearings in our newscast tomorrow.
Thank you. Hello, hello, hello. Hello. Well, it's good to be in Wisconsin.
President Obama took his post-State of the Union show on the road, speaking Thursday at a General Electric gas engines factory in Waukesha, Wisconsin. The president was also scheduled to speak at McGavock High School in Nashville, Tennessee, later Thursday. Former Georgia Congressional Representative Cynthia McKinney was one of the millions who saw the State of the Union address. She was the Green Party's candidate for president in 2008, facing then-Senator Obama and Senator John McCain. We spoke with her about her 2008 campaign platform and what changes she would have made had she been elected then.
Thanks, Don, for giving me a call.
Thank you for speaking with us and our audience. So you heard the State of the Union address. This was his fifth, I guess. And I went back and looked at some of the things that you had promised during the campaign in 2008 when you ran against Obama as the Green Party presidential candidate. And the things that you were looking to accomplish, the issues you ran on, haven't even been referenced by Obama since he ran in 2008. Maybe you want to go through some of those things. What would it be like if you had been elected and some of those things were enacted?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to note that we would be in a vastly different world had I been elected, or I believe any of the pro-peace party candidates been elected. Of course, there were some of the things that we talked about, bringing all of our troops home from the various more than 100 bases around the world, not just ending the wars, but being affirmative in our actions for peace, even going so far as to change the name of the Department of State to the Department of Peace, so that people all over the world would recognize that it was a regime change had taken place in the United States, mm-hmm. and that the values that promoted our policy were going to be vastly different.
Mm. And one particularly glaring example of the Obama administration's, say, vector with the program that you proposed in 2008, you had one specific plank to stop the militarization of Africa because AFRICOM had just been created in 2008 and what it was intended to do was becoming clear. What has happened in Africa under the Obama administration?
Well, it's been absolutely horrible under the Obama administration. And in fact, I didn't think that the U.S. policy could get any worse than it already has been under George Herbert Walker Bush and George W. Bush. But under President Obama, it's worse. The African continent is being bombed daily by the United States. And that is with the innovation and the use of drone warfare. But the drones are dropping their bombs all over the African continent. The drone bases are being established all over the African continent. And innocents are dying because of U.S. policy because it is U.S. policy to bomb innocents and kill them. That's what's happening right now as we speak in Somalia. And, of course, there's been a lot of discussion recently about the bombing that's taken place in Libya, not the bombing that took place in 2011, but the bombing that's taken place right now. And yes, right now there's bombing that's going on in the southern part of Libya.
Yeah, and what's being, basically, there's an aerial campaign being conducted against the dissidents that are in southern Libya. These are people that support the old Jamahiriya, the society that existed before, and they are being subjected to the treatment that Gaddafi was accused of using, and in fact wasn't using, that was the raison for the war in the first place.
You're absolutely right. And so now it's very clear. I was at a conference, and Gaddafi said at that conference that Egypt, there's no way that he knew that Libya was the target. Libya had always been the target. Libya was the target in 1986 when President Ronald Reagan bombed Tripoli and killed Gaddafi's daughter. In 1991, Libya was on the list to be invaded and regime change, have the regime overthrown. In 2001, Libya was on the list for this bombing, and it finally came in 2011. And according to the conference that I was in, where Gaddafi spoke, he recognized that there's no, the only way you could get to Libya was by way of Tunisia and Egypt. And so, and you had to knock both of them down. Talk about the domino theory. You had to knock both of them down in order to be able to get at Libya. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, the so-called Arab Spring that began in both those two countries, one on the east, Egypt, and one on the west, Tunisia, of Libya. And immediately after that happened, within the same month, you had people massing into Benghazi, which is right next to Egypt, from Egypt, and U.S. and U.K. and French troops landing there in February of 2011. And all the way through removing Libya as an obstacle to the embedding of AFRICOM all across the continent, which has actually taken place in the aftermath of what happened in Libya.
You're absolutely right. And so we have seen the, I just call it the outright pusillanimous behavior of African leaders who have succumbed instead of uniting. And so we even see AFRICOM in Ghana. I mean, places where you never would have thought that you would have seen the U.S. Stationing its military there. Now, this is not for the benefit of the African people. This is not for the benefit of the people in the U.S. This is prepositioning of military assets for the predicted skirmishes around natural resources, as has always been the case in terms of Africa, because, you know, I used to be a natural resource. I'm talking about the trafficking in the human cargo that took place for hundreds of years. So it's always been a place where the Europeans have sought to extract. And so now the extracting can only continue if China is displaced. So the idea is to make me believe that China is my enemy and that therefore China has no place on the African continent. That belongs to the Europeans. And if they can get the Africans to believe that as well, then they will have won. As Steve Biko said, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed. So this is exactly what they are trying to make the people in the United States believe. They also are trying to make people in the United States believe that Russia is an enemy. So if the people of the United States are already primed to have this war against China and Russia, then the only thing that's left to do is to preposition your military assets in such a way as that you can have that. And that's what the pivot to Asia is all about. So when I last visited Malaysia, my message to the Asians was to beware President Obama's pivot to Asia. The last thing you want is U.S. military attention, because you'll get what Libya got.
Mm-hmm. It's tough to argue with that, given the history. Just looking forward, if you were delivering the State of the Union address and laying out some things that needed to be done going forward from where we are right now, what are some of the things that you would have proposed?
Well, let's see where we could start. First of all, I think on the matter of war and peace, we would have an immediate end to all U.S. military positioning in war, participation in war. That would be over. It would be called the Day of Peace. And that's a foreign policy. So not just the policy differences around the world, beginning with promotion of peace and the things that go into a peace economy, but also promotion of those values in our domestic policy as well, so that the Green Party has 10 key values, and among them are democracy, social justice, environmental wisdom. And these are the kinds of things that really the people of the United States need, because I believe that a vast majority of the people in this country are sick and tired of having war criminals for presidents, but they really don't see a way out. And it is up to us to provide not only the vision, but the leadership, so that more and more people, we've got to be able to touch them in new and exciting and innovative ways, but so that more and more people will be able to share our vision and know that there is an alternative. For example, the president talked about energy and not using foreign oil, but the choice is destroying the environment through fracking. And war, of course, is the U.S. energy policy. We also would have to pay very close attention to domestic policy. And so that means not only our environmental issues, our labor issues, our immigration issues, racism, sexism, homophobia, Islamophobia, police terror. He talked about health care and having affordable treatment. But what he didn't mention was that he has placed the insurance companies directly in the middle of healthcare. So what the Affordable Care Act represents is health insurance reform, not really health care. Had there been health care reform, then we would have eliminated the need for the health insurance companies to come in between the decisions that my doctor makes for me. And we would have gone to either Medicare for All, which is what I spoke about, or Medicaid for All.
You know, that's one item that you ran on, and you advocated for that in Congress, by the way, for the long time that you were in Congress. And Obama really had no record of that going into the 2008 election. But people poll in favor of universal health care, all they have for years now, and yet that wasn't on the agenda. Likewise, with the military, bringing the troops home from around the world, cutting back on the military and using that to fund growth in the economy. A number of these issues are things that your position squared with the polling data among the electorate, and yet, you know, they voted for either Obama or John McCain in 2008.
Well, it's hard to get people to do something differently in their political behavior when I wouldn't say that, well, it is a norm as well that they voted for either the Democratic or the Republican Party, and there was, you know, very little consideration of alternative political parties. As long as that's the case, we'll continue to get what we have always gotten, because there is very little difference between the Democrats' public policy pursued by Democrats and by Republicans, sadly.
Mm. You know, looking at Detroit, for example, you were advocating using the money that ended up going to the banks, the so-called bailout money, to invest in production of modern, you know, 21st century cars. And Detroit, 5 years into Obama's administration, is bankrupt, and the workers' pensions are in play in the bankruptcy court and all of that. Why did the unions, for example, the UAW, not get behind a program to invest hundreds of billions of dollars in the domestic auto industry?
Well, I look at investment in the U.S. period, and what has been done to the dollar is almost criminal as well. The dollar today is worthless. Labor is under attack. Political jargon is to slash bureaucracy. Basically, what that means is letting corporations run rampant over the environment and over labor standards. When they say, let's end the war, put an end to war, the sad fact is that we've got the policy being led by war criminals. When they say, let's make loans to small businesses, the example that we have is Solyndra, where I think it was $500 million just goes kaput. There's so much corruption in the administration of the system that all needs to be rooted out. And the only way that's going to happen is to have fresh eyes looking at every aspect of the government and being courageous enough to say that this is the way it is, and this is what we're going to do to change things.
Mm. Yeah, on the corruption issue, you had advocated to decriminalize young black and brown men, particularly people, to take the profit out of prisons and to end the prison industrial complex and the drug war and all of the things that attend that, including police killings of young black and brown men, which are now up to one every 38 hours, last numbers that I saw. This is actually, all of this is intensified under the Obama administration and under the Holder Justice Department. What do you think about all of that?
It absolutely has intensified, and we need look no any further than the streets of New York City, where you can get what's supposed to be a tremendously progressive mayor elected in New York City, and yet it's the same police chief with the same stop and frisk policies.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.